best of FUBAR Radio. Best of FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio presents
Ian Molesworth.
We're joined now by Kadeem Ramsey. So we're talking about Top Boy, which Nat's a bit obsessed with. And you come in with branded Top Boy gear. Are you contractually obliged to do that?
No, I just like it.
It's good. You wear it well.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, it looks good.
I just feel like wearing it.
Nice hoodie.
The only show I watch currently is Top Boy. I've been watching Top Boy over and over.
I love that you do watch your own show.
No, that's not only it.
Are you going for your Top Boy tattoo after you've done this interview? Right across your forehead.
I'm scared of tattoos.
Are you really?
Yeah, are you? I don't want to be getting a tattoo and the guy says, whoops, that's one thing I don't want to hear.
Ian Molesworth.
Every Monday from 4 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
We're joined now by Mark DeLissa in the studio. From The Voice, is that correct?
Yeah, kind of. I mean, I did it for 7 years on the BBC.
That counts. What did you do on it?
I was a voice coach, so behind the scenes voice coach. Nice. You know, working with all the contestants and making sure that they do the things that they're supposed to do.
So, and you the new, what were they called, them too, who used to do all the reality shows?
Ant and Dec.
No.
David and Kerry.
Yeah, them too. Yeah. So are you like updated version of that?
Well, yeah, I think so. There's a lot of us. On a show like The Voice, there's about 8-9 of us that worked on that.
Okay.
And it's obviously still going now, and there's loads of people still doing that. But I don't do it anymore.
Okay.
Because I've moved on to do other things.
Well, before we move on to talk about those, I've got some questions about my voice.
Go, tell me.
I am 24 years old.
Yes.
And
looking good for it.
Yeah, I do look all right
you
on
look
it.
Amazing.
Yeah, I do look all right on it. But let's say, should I be worried, say, when I get into my 40s, right?
No.
About my voice deteriorating?
No.
So if my voice does deteriorate,
yeah.
It has.
Okay, I have it.
What should I be concerned about that?
Okay, so in terms of deterioration, speaking voice?
That, and also my singing voice, of which I don't really, again, it's not a regularly used muscle, really.
Yeah, yeah.
As much as it would have been.
You have sung on the show, and you do have a nice voice.
Yeah,
no,
yeah.
But back in the day, I could really belt out a tune. I certainly can't reach notes that I used to be able to reach at all. Can't come near them.
Okay, but what are you doing? You're not singing regularly, then.
Not really.
Well, this is the
is that problem. What it is?
Of course,
yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
If you're not doing it, then ultimately you're not gonna have the technique that you used to have. You know what I mean? So,
I used to not be doing it that often.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I don't think that's changed, really.
Yeah.
The amount that I sing. Well, maybe it has. I used to do band. I had bands and stuff. I was in a couple of musicals.
Yeah. So you said that you were singing on a more regular basis.
I think I knackered my voice when I was younger. I think I did. Because I did Rocky Horror and I did Blues Brothers.
Right.
And I think Blues Brothers particularly,
yeah.
I knew nothing about warm-ups or anything like that, really.
Right.
And I was belting out all them songs.
Yeah.
And I think I've probably knackered my vocal cords a bit.
Doesn't sound bad, though.
Which I think I sound a little bit hoarse.
You sound a little breathy, ever so slightly.
I'm getting that a lot, you know, where I get breathy.
Yeah, that
might be just general fitness, then.
Yeah. But there's things that we could do to fix that.
Okay, how much would it be to fix it?
Couple of quid.
A couple of quid. So that is on the record now.
That is good.
A couple of quid. So I've got Mark DeLissa.
I was going to say a couple of hundred quid.
Erstwhile of The Voice, who has now said on the record that he will vocal train me for, and I quote, a couple of quid.
That's amazing.
Listen.
I said it.
I'll give you one session for a couple of quid. There we go.
How long
will
the session be?
Hour.
Oh my God.
An hour. And what will we do in that session?
In that session, I'll just we just assess your voice. See what it sounds like, see what you're doing, check your technique, and then.
Right.
Just give you some
do
exercises.
I check a bit of it now?
Yeah, so just sing one.
Kind of threat.
Yeah, yeah.
A vape as well. That's probably no good, is it?
Yeah, that's not really helping.
The first session's a couple of grand. I assume the second session is like 20 grand or something.
That's right.
The second one, yeah. Yeah. Gets you.
I'll just do one. Same as guitar, this. I'll just get enough to get by. Right, okay, I'm ready.
All right, so just sing one note. Any note that you
do. Do you want my statue? Am I all right?
Yeah, just drop your hands by your sides. Brilliant. And then just sing one note.
Shoulder apart.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Done all this shit before.
Well, hip width actually is better, not shoulder width.
Oh, really?
So
my hips are the same as the shoulders?
No, they're not.
Well, they are.
Well, I can't see them actually, so.
Well, they definitely are.
Okay.
Right. So what am I singing?
Just any note. Do an R. Okay, so instantly.
Oh, fucking, can I finish doing it?
No, hang on. Instantly, what you've done is you've over aspirated. So you've gone.
I do that.
Right?
You do over aspirate.
I tend to over aspirate sometimes.
Yeah. There's no need to over aspirate because when you over aspirate, you put far too much breath past the vocal folds.
Right? Okay.
So the vocal folds need hydration.
Okay.
Yeah, so they need to be lubricated.
Yep.
When you put too much breath past them, they then dry out, which means that they are phonating dry. which ultimately
I've
means
said this that the phonating drive
does that make sense? So phonation is this, the coming together of the vocal folds.
Okay,
that's right.
Okay.
Did you have water? Past them. Okay. Did you just have a little sip?
Not going to make any difference. Okay. Not going to make any difference.
Yeah, not sure. Okay.
All right.
So what you've got to do is you firstly got to say, all right, instead of over-aspirating.
What's aspirating?
Breathiness.
Breathiness, okay.
Yeah? Okay. Right. All right, so let me put it in. So you, basically you're putting far too much breath past your vocal folds.
Fine. So I do it again without too much breath.
Without too much breath. Okay, still too much. So do this for me. And then long. Okay, you still went to breath. So watch this. You went.
I've got to breathe.
No, hang on. So you did. So we're going to go.
I was trying to make it sound
nice. Everybody does that.
That's what I think.
Let's add some breath so it sounds better. No, it doesn't.
All right, okay, fine.
Ready?
Yeah, what am I doing again?
To aspirate. Okay.
Good.
Thank
and,
you.
And hold that.
All right, okay, all sorry. Right.
So that's a far better sound. Now, if you're using that sound more often than the breathy one, then you're gonna have a better sustained voice.
How long do you reckon it'll be before I could get a recording contract? If that was something I wanted to do, which is not really, but...
It would need to assess you over a good...
What did we just do? Weeks.
That was like the pre-assessment.
Right, okay. Yeah. All right, that's fine, because I'm not paying for that. I never agreed to that.
Exactly, yeah, exactly.
Okay, fine.
So a pre-assessment. But you think my voice, I could get it back... Somewhat like
absolutely 100%.
Okay.
100%.
How much do you genuinely charge?
Write
it down if you feel uncomfortable.
Okay. It really all depends. But
how
it's...
much would you charge? No, just anyone, not him. I was gonna
don't
say.
Think don't by the clothes I'm wearing and this sort of thing.
That's reasonable.
Power.
That's reasonable.
That's reasonable, right?
Well, yeah, if you're buying a car.
No. I thought you were going to add another... I think you add another zero onto that for some reason. I was going to go, what the hell? Okay.
Come on.
That's all right, yeah.
Well, this is what I'm saying. It's like, you know, it's got to be accessible to people.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I'm just not going to be like, okay, I only work with... Because, you know, all right, so a lot of people will say I'm a vocal coach to the stars, and I don't really like that title.
Well,
because
I want you to be called that if I'm coming.
Well, you know what?
You can be
my star. But the truth is, it needs to be accessible to people, because I'm really very much about... making sure that everybody has access to just, you know, good quality teaching and good quality education, because I believe that singing is something that really brings you to a better place in your mind, you know, in terms of your well-being and all of that.
FUBAR Radio presents Tuesday Takeover.
It's your boy, Jack Fowler. I have got Jamel 1-5.
How much do you weigh?
How much do I weigh? Like 18 stone.
Bro, that's heavy.
I'm 16.
Blood. Oh, yeah, thank
you. I think I'm 40. I think
40 what?
14
kilograms.
No,
14 kilograms. No, you mean 14
stones. Stones.
If you're 14, okay, yeah, you're dead.
Yeah,
you're dead.
It's peak.
He's done out here.
If I'm 14.
Bro, you need to eat. Eat up, man.
Yeah, I actually do.
At 5 goats in the morning, man, get me. 12 o'clock.
I just have
a couple babies and that. Yeah. 1 p.m. Yeah.
Yeah.
A bit of salad and that. And then like 2:45.
Yeah.
A couple BBWs, innit?
The Tuesday Takeover. Every Tuesday from 4 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Lovely listeners, you're in for a treat today. I'm Giovanni Letford. I'm a DJ, presenter, and I'm joined by Jill Marie Cooper.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good. I've got my cup of tea next to me. I'm ready to chat. So
That's good. Well, why don't everyone in the studio give a round of applause for the one and only Tim. Professor Tim, actually. I should say Professor Tim, shouldn't I?
Yes, please.
If you want
Professor
to.
Tim.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Tim, tell us about, you were a monk, right?
I was. I wasn't a very good monk. I got thrown. I got thrown out for rank disobedience. I have to say that word very carefully. Rank. It was all about the rhubarb patch.
I'm totally confused.
Every day they said to me, "What do you think you should do this afternoon?" And I'd say, "Oh, I think I should be doing something in the library." And they said, garden, rhubarb patch, and one day I thought, oh, I'm going to be 10 steps ahead of them. I'm going to take a leaf out of Giovanni's book. And I said, and they said to me, what do you think you're going to do this afternoon? I said, oh, I'm going to go to the rhubarb patch. And they said, you're absolutely right. That was it. I spent my entire life in the rhubarb patch, and I rebelled. I applied to Oxford without permission.
Oh, is that what you did?
Yeah,
oh, okay.
And I didn't tell anybody.
Mm.
And then the months sort of wore on, and I got to September or something. I said, oh, you do know I'm going to Oxford next month? And they said, pack your bags. That was it.
But sounds like if you'd already planned that, that you were ready to pack your bags anyway.
I thought it'd be very jolly to go up to Oxford as a monk, you know.
Was it jolly?
Did you? It was wonderful.
I was in Oxford during the Brideshead time. So Brideshead had been screened on the television and we were all walking around the place in white trousers and wonderful cardigans and jumpers hanging over our shoulders and carrying teddy bears. It was tremendous.
Oh, wow. I love it.
Yeah. And then, was that the beginning of your academic journey, as it were?
Probably. It was also the beginning of my sort of a certain amount of chaos because I think in my second year, I was given a white rabbit.
Mm.
And I kept this rabbit in the front of my... Well, I kept it in a fireplace and I took the rabbit on walks, or I put it in my bicycle basket. And on one dreadful occasion, the rabbit had a yellow lead, and it matched my bow tie. and on one dreadful occasion, the rabbit got away.
Oh. Like it does.
And I was crawling for about 2 hours through Christchurch Meadows, and I found the rabbit, took the rabbit home. And a month later, the rabbit, who was a boy, gave birth.
My goodness. You have had a life, haven't you?
So you found a different rabbit.
I think it was the same rabbit. Yeah. I think I just wasn't very good at identifying the gender.
And did you decide to just go from one day from rabbits to goats, or like how did the goat herding in Greece was?
The goat herding was again completely accidental. I got stranded in Greece in the Peloponnese in the southern bit of Greece near Sparta.
I love how you just say this, like, really casual. I just got stranded in Greece, like, just like a normal day.
It was a normal day. I remember, you know, Sparta. Have you been to Sparta?
I don't think I have.
You see, there's nothing there. The Spartans didn't build anything except for their bodies. That was it.
Right.
But just down the road from Sparta, there's a wonderful little town, and the last stronghold of the Byzantine Empire. And I was there for a while, and then I went up into the Taygetos Mountains, and an old man said to me, "Sonny, would you like to look after my goats?" And I thought, two or three goats, what's the problem there? And he presented me this tribe, a tribe of 100 black goats with horns out here like handlebars.
Wow.
Oh, my gosh, I'd be terrified.
Yeah, that's a bit mad.
They were lovely. They climbed trees. Have you ever milked a goat?
No, I'm kind of all right for that, really.
Milking goats is extraordinary because when you milk a cow, the cow leans on you, you lean on the cow, certain things come out the backside, and everything is fine because the pail of milk is in the right place. But when you're trying to milk a goat, you have to sort of pull the udder through the back legs. You milk the goat relaxes and rather more falls into the pail of milk than you expect.
Mm.
You've done it all, haven't you?
Do you know, actually, on that, you know, you mentioned about goats. I was meant to ask you a minute ago. You said about they climb trees. I was in Greece last year for a wedding, and we went to, is it Chania? One of those Greek islands.
Chania. So you went down to Crete?
Yes,
the north side of Crete. Yeah. I know it very well.
Yeah, it's because it's a walking island as well. People tend to...
I think
you get a ferry from Chania to somewhere else. The name's escaped me, but Hanya's really nice. But one thing I noticed was that with the goats, there were loads of goats, and they were like literally stood on the most, you know, like this, like imagine like a cliff edge, and you know, like at the very edge, there's like a rock. And there's a goat just standing on the rock on the cliff edge. And you're like, how did the goat get there? And how is it going to get down?
They can go up vertically. They're quite extraordinary.
Mm.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I never knew all of this. I just eat curried goat.
But
it's like, sorry, goats.
But they've also got the most lovely personality.
Oh, don't. I feel terrible.
No, really, they have. Every goat I had, I gave it a name of someone I knew in the village. And occasionally
we're just like tracing the goat.
I've got to tell you, Cy from the circle.
Oh yeah.
Yesterday, he got a new calf.
Oh.
And he's called it Professor Tim.
Professor Tim.
Oh.
Isn't that lovely?
Is that off the back of you telling him that you named goats after people, or was that just a?
I don't know. I'm incredibly touched.
Mm. Oh, I'm glad. FUBAR Radio presents Joey Page.
Jim Sturgis joins us in the studio. Do you find when you've been like, it's obviously rehearsals and filming and that takes a real long time. Do you sometimes find the traits of these characters seeping into your life?
There was a film I did called London Fields where I was covered in tattoos. I was playing like a really unpleasant character in that film, and it started to rub off on me, and I was sort of walking around thinking I was probably a lot harder than I am in real life, and someone nearly ran me over in a car, and I was a little too quick to fucking offer him out.
I come out of this studio on a Wednesday going, I'm well good at this, and then it's like, I might get out of my way. I'm getting on the bus. Sorry, mate.
Joey Page. Every Wednesday from 2 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
It's a delight to welcome Tim Moore into the studio. It's not very often that we get people in that have written books, and I'm so in awe of one of my best friends has written a novel which is yet to get published. I'm sure he won't like me saying that on it, but I have read it, and I just think the incredible amount of work that goes into it. Like, he started off probably much like yourself, he's a journalist, and then decided to write a book. But a lot of hard graft goes into writing a book, first of all. So let's get...
I mean, this book took me a decade, basically.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
I mean, I'd been exposed to the scene in the early 90s. I spent the 90s in Berlin as a DJ, basically. Yeah. At that time, I met the first people who'd been involved in the East German punk scene. There was a guy at one of the places I had a residency who we became friends, and he showed me this folder of materials he had stashed below a false drawer bottom through the dictatorship, and had a few lyric scraps and a few photos of him and his friends, and just a light went off in my head. I was like, I want to tell the story someday.
But when did he show this to you?
Early 90s.
Yeah. So obviously around that time, not long after the wall had come down, people were maybe still a little bit wary that you would keep it under a false drawer.
Well, that was that moment of energy. You know, the scene in the 80s, they'd gotten really good at carving out space, sort of philosophical and physical, in East Germany. So they were living within the boundary of East Germany, but outside of society, right? Yeah. And then in the 90s, what happened was when they lost control of the political situation, because none of them wanted unification. And when they lost control of the political situation, they basically went back to the mode of the 80s, and they started carving out space where they could live by their ideals. And that was the club life that we know now from in Berlin.
I got engaged in Berlin, right? It's the only time I've ever been. We went for, it was David Bowie's, it would have been his 70th birthday. I read in your book that obviously it's very hard to get pictures of punks from that era because there's no photography, especially in the clubs, and that continued. And that still holds to this day. We went to a club in Berlin and it's still no photography.
Yeah, I mean, most of the a good amount of the photos are actually shot by the Stasi, by the secret police.
Yeah.
So they all, especially all the motion picture, that was all Stasi surveillance stuff.
Yeah,
that's
right.
All there is, because it was too dangerous to be pictured. You know, I mean, the punk activists spent longer time, they had longer prison sentences than any other activist group in the 80s. I mean, some of these bands went to prison for 2 years for their lyrics.
Yeah, which right. It's because of that they came out and carried on that really gave us, like, fanned the flames of this movement and really...
Totally.
Helped, like, make it a much bigger force and help bring down the Berlin Wall.
Totally. I mean, that was a game-changing revelation. So, basically, like, in a society like this, the big mystery is what happens if you run afoul of the secret police, right? And the punks did that experiment. They took on the Stasi and, you know, detainments, interrogation, constant harassment, beatings, psychological torture from the Stasi, being conscripted into army units that specialized in political re-education and the prison sentences. And they, like you said, they came back out and they kept fighting. And that was a game-changer. It was that revelation to the rest of the opposition-minded people, I think, is what enabled the protest to move out into the streets where it could snowball.
Now, one thing that I found quite surprising about this whole thing, I've not managed to read the whole book yet, but I have been reading it and I'm really enjoying it. And, like, obviously for work, for something like this as research, I'll be like, right, I've got to read this book, or I've got to read at least some of it. But I'm really excited to carry on reading it after today, so I hope will come across as a mark of how genuinely I am enjoying it to you. And I very much get from what you described at the beginning about the starkness of Germany, and that's still there in a lot of parts of Berlin, and when I went to Hamburg, and still like a big anti-establishment feel to things. Like, I know that a Starbucks opened up there and they sort of, as it was being like ready, they smashed it up, and obviously you've got the football team St. Pauli as well. So I wanted to know what your feelings were towards like the state of the punk scene in Germany today.
You know, I think it's funny because the bands involved in the opposition to the dictatorship, they all realized really quickly that the main goal was reached. You know, when the wall came down, they'd met their main goal. You know, one of the beauties of the scene was the simplicity of their message. You know, there were a lot of other activist groups were sort of reformists, and they were like, you know, let's change environmental regulations, or let's get military training out of schools. And the punks were like, fuck the system, let's bring it down. Right?
Yeah, right.
And that was a really powerful message. And I think the other thing that we were talking about in terms of the carving out space, right, that's the part of punk that lived on, I think, in the 90s in the most important way. It was this ethos of, this DIY ethos of creating the world that you wanted to live in. And so the music, it changed pretty quickly as soon as the wall came down. They realized the message and the music was going to have to change, but they kept this DIY ethos that allowed them to create these oases of ideology, basically, where they could live in,
yeah,
their,
right,
in their environment. Yeah.
I was reading about, I'm not going to be able to pronounce this properly, even though, which is shame on me because my grandmother is German, so I should be able to, but she never taught me any German because by the time I grew up, she'd basically forgotten how to speak German. But Schreinerstrasse 47,
yeah,
that's the kind of place that you're talking about,
exactly,
here, right? So, and that's a place that you'd have spent time in.
Yeah, well, yeah. I bet a lot of people that listen to your show would have been to Tacheles, right, which was the sort of ground zero of Berlin nightlife in the 90s, which is that massive squat complex in Mitte.
Yeah,
that
right.
That was squatted by East German punks, too.
And so can you, like, from your point of view, because obviously you went there in the 90s after the wall came down, and that's where you became a DJ, but, you know, a lot of these places you would have spent quite a lot of time in. So is there, like, could you maybe tell us something that really still kind of stays with you about one of these kind of complexes? Is there something like really cool or like a time that you remember very vividly?
Yeah, well, the memories kind of blur together when you're in a scene like that for a long period of time. But I think one of the coolest parts was the way there was this collective notion of doing things, right? So the big change for me when I went back to New York was people gauged a good night on whether you saw someone famous or something like that, right? Whereas in Berlin, it was, did every single person have a good time? And everyone worked to create that good time, you know?
Yeah, right.
And it was, you know, sometimes people would say, just lock up when you leave. People would leave their own clubs and say, you guys can keep partying. Just pull the door closed when you leave. I mean, it was this incredible collective euphoria in the 90s.
And you get, I think, more than, I mean, it's very much diluted compared to the time that you're talking about, but I feel like even in Berlin today, there's still a feeling of that a little bit, as much as there can be in these modern times,
compared to
say somewhere like London or whatever. So
yeah, I mean, I agree with you. Going back and forth between New York and Berlin, you definitely see that Berlin has more sort of people power, right? It's still there. Yeah, it's powerful. A lot of the clubs still have are still organized as collectives. A lot of them have political arms that can get people out to demonstrations. There's definitely still that feeling.
FUBAR Radio presents Harriet Rose.
Ruth Ann is here.
Hi.
By the way, never expected to like Niall Horan's solo stuff.
I love how you're calling him Niall Horan. You know, it's Niall Horan.
Oh, fucking hell.
But I love that. I've got a voice note of him and tell him Niall Horan. Well, he's probably heard that before.
Please,
but he's Irish,
don't.
So it's Niall Horan. But yeah.
Niall Horan.
Whatever.
Sorry, Niall Horan.
Say it whatever way you want.
Niall
Horan.
No, I'm questioning it.
No, it is Niall Horan. Yeah, because it's Horan.
Dude, you're fucking Irish.
I know,
of course,
yes,
you're going to get
Irish.
It right.
Harriet Rose. Every Thursday from 4 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
We're back, FUBAR Radio. Alexander 23 is here.
Hey, what's going on?
We've caught you while you're flying by the UK. How you doing?
I'm doing very, very good.
Now tell me, where were you last night?
I was in Berlin last night.
Yeah, looks
for a show.
Sick.
It was nuts. The people were going crazy. It was fucking cool. I've been told I can swear, so I'm going to try and swear as much as I can.
Do it. Go on, go for it.
Fuck shit, ass, all those.
Ass. Ass. I like the way you say ass. Talking of great songs, Another Summer Night Without You, mm-hmm. obviously was on the 13 Reasons Why. That's true. That kind of sync is just another level for up-and-coming artists.
Yeah,
how did it
was,
feel when you found out about that?
That was crazy. I actually found out about that and playing Lollapalooza in the same day. So that
Whoa.
Was it's a pretty crazy day. And I'm from Chicago, so it was a wild day. But it was really cool, and it's just like, it was such a cool amplifier for a song that meant a lot to me. So it was cool to see everything transpire, you know, before, during, and after that.
Which song, which news do you focus on when you get those two? Because it's kind of a bit annoying when you get loads of good news at once. You're like, oh, just give me like a day in between. So
My mom was pretty psyched about it, so it was worth it just to call her and tell her those things.
I love calling my mum and telling her stuff, and she doesn't know what I'm talking about, which is 90% of what I do for a living. She's like, that's such great news. I don't know what that is.
Yeah, exactly.
And I'm like, yeah, okay, fine.
But she's scored either way.
So you were you performed in London two nights ago,
yeah.
And I saw you, I think you tweeted like, oh my God, that was incredible. You Instagrammed or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Was it just like the best?
Oh, it was amazing.
Vibe?
I mean, it's always been a dream to even just be in London. I've never been here before, so.
Welcome.
Thank you. So to play it was a dream come true, and people were so like, responsive and open to me, even though most of them had never even heard of my name. So that was really cool.
Well, it's an interesting one because we always get different feedback about UK audiences. So were they quite animated, or were they just very much engaged and listening?
It started as definitely a bit more reserved. You know, you see that in like these cities like London, New York, or LA, where it's like everyone tours through here. So they're spoiled, you know? I grew up in Chicago. Everyone goes to Chicago, you know? Like, you don't have to like wait, you know, 5 years to see your favorite band.
Yeah.
So it started definitely a bit more reserved, but I could feel that, you know, kind of like winning them over throughout the show, which is a really cool feeling.
And can I just say that is literally that is quintessential essential for British or like people in the UK watching music. It's like, I'm going to stand here and let you like make me want to listen.
Yeah, and that is,
if you felt that, that is so important, because I feel bad a lot sometimes because I know that we're quite reserved as an audience. I mean, I'm not. You can probably tell from my personality, I'm not that shy. But a lot of people who go to enjoy music are chill and they're shy but they're connecting with you on a sort of another level.
Totally, yeah. And like, yeah, I thought it went well, and then like after the show and the next day, I got like so many fucking like messages on Instagram of like, oh, I loved your show, by the way, like that was, you know, stuff like that. So I was like, okay, like it did, you know, I was a little nervous, but it did go very well.
Well, I think your music connects quite well. It's kind of, it's very like obvious. It's like, you know what you're saying,
yeah,
and we
definitely
can like, we're feeling it with you.
Thank you, yeah. I think it's definitely polarizing. Like it's either for you or it's not for you, but regardless, you know.
I'd rather be like that than a bit like, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
I'd rather be, you know, either like me or don't like me or...
Me? Yeah, no, me too. I mean, like, even when I write, like, if I finish a song and it's good, like, I'll never send it anywhere. No one will love it. But if it's great, I'll say, you know, a good song doesn't do anything for anyone. So.
No. Can I ask you a question?
Please.
I always like to know what kind of songs put you in certain moods. So is there like a song, like what song do you play when you're like annoyed or you're at the gym and you need to smash out some exercise, like something that gets you really going?
You're just reminding me that I'm not in the gym, but...
Don't bother about the gym, it's boring. But
thank you.
My example is like, I like to listen to My Chemical Romance.
Oh, I love that. That's actually a good answer. When I'm in the gym and I just need to get fucking to it.
Or like someone's annoyed you and so you put this song on. It's like Teenagers by My Chemical Romance is a good one.
Oh,
or
I'm like
Not
that.
Okay by Chemical Romance. That's like the most teen angst song of the generation. But is there songs that you link to moments? Like, is there something you always put on when you're feeling really happy?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, if I like wake up in the morning, I'm putting on like Hall & Oates, or I'm putting on Fleetwood Mac, and I'm just like feeling good.
So you're kind of like wafting around.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's no better like music to brush your teeth to and shit than like, you know, Hall & Oates just bopping around.
I haven't tried that yet, so I'm going to try that tomorrow
morning.
It's
good. I recommend it. 10 out of 10.
Everyone, you need to brush your teeth to Hall & Oates. That's what we're saying. Yeah, do you know, weirdly, I've gotten a space of like any song can make me be in a good mood now. Even
love
like
that.
You know, like the new Selena Gomez song, which is like the saddest song in the world, and I'm vibing off it. But I know what you mean. Sometimes you just need that unadulterated happiness, because
definitely
we're in a world where it's like happy. There's a lot of sad bangers around right now.
Totally, and I feel like people use music like medicine in a certain way, and you can like, you know, ascribe like certain songs to make you feel a certain way, and to like have a song come out that I love and I think musically is so interesting, and then also be a song that people can turn on and just feel okay is really, really nice.
Is there any UK artists that you'd like, you would, in a dream world, you'd hit up while you're here?
Ooh, that's a good question.
I know it's a hard one because I know it's putting you on the spot, but we've just got a lot going on in the UK scene right now, so I wondered whether
definitely
there's...
Well, I was actually with Youngblood last night.
Oh, sick.
We have a lot of mutual friends, but I just met him for the first time last night, and he's fucking awesome. That dude is nuts. So.
He's a powerhouse, isn't he?
He's just like off the wall.
Also, but, making me re-love pop punk again.
100%. Like. No, he's doing such a cool thing in such an authentic way. It's like, if I, like, not that I had any doubts, but if I had any doubts about how like honest and authentic that is to him, they were just fucking squashed last night, because that dude is fucking rock and roll. He's just crazy.
Oh, I love to hear that, because he seems like such a dude.
Yeah, definitely. And he's that is him. Like, everything you see of him publicly, like, that is him.
I think that's why I love him so much, because it reminds me of being like 17 and being like, he's got that energy for me.
He embodies that just like youthful spirit, and I think that's why it's connected, because it's so real, you know, and like people can see that like that's him.
Let's
like,
get a collab, please.
I would love it.
That would be amazing. That'd babe be, it's been such a pleasure to catch up.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate it.
FUBAR Radio presents
Callum McSwiggan.
I'm very lucky, very fortunate, in fact, today, because I am joined in the studio by the stunning, the gorgeous Lucy and the Mayor. One of the things that comes up a lot with like bi visibility, etc., in general, is that there can be quite a bit of, I don't want to say hate, but like there's almost like negativity that comes from within the community.
Absolutely.
As well as outside of it. Is that something that you've ever experienced personally?
Oh, speak to any bisexual about dating in the LGBT community. It's incredible how many times I've gone on a date with someone who identifies as lesbian, and the second I say I'm bisexual, they're
really
over it. They don't want anything to do with me.
That's utterly absurd to me.
I
can't fathom that. Is it?
It's a thing.
What is their logic for doing
great
that?
Great question.
You're like, I don't
great
know.
Great question.
Callum McSwiggan.
Every Wednesday from 6 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Now, one of the things that I am most proud of doing this radio show is that we exclusively play music from LGBT plus artists here. And I am even more delighted because in the studio with me today, I'm joined by the incredible, the stunning, the beautiful, it's Miss Toya DeLazy. How are you doing?
Hey, Callum. You're making me blush. I'm hot sweat. What's wrong with you?
It is a pleasure to have you here. Now, you are an incredible LGBT plus artist.
Thank you.
And you have just birthed into the world some brand new music. So tell us a little bit about that.
My vibe is Afro Rave. So kind of mixed Zulu, which is like my language, and with like contemporary British sounds like dubstep, garage and grime, and kind of fused it, and it makes this vibe called Afro Rave.
So tell us about the new single, which is Funani?
Funani,
yeah.
Good. Okay. it's like Punani with a F.
Yeah, I got that. Yeah, I figured that one out.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about it.
Funani means what do you want in Zulu? If you say to somebody, Funani, it means what do you want?
Oh, and okay.
I wanted to show people that are unconventional, queer culture, just difference, you know, the grey matter. And I want to show that in a different space. So we shot it in the township in South Africa.
Amazing.
And basically, Funan is like, you can be anything you freaking want. Get the mask off. Fuck what people are saying. Yeah. Be who you wanna fucking be.
Do you think at the moment there is definitely a place for, you know, I feel like we're seeing more and more queer artists coming out and not just coming and showing us their music and showing us their talent, but actually, you know, showing their identity and making it a core part of their music. Do you think there's almost a, like we've been craving this for a while now?
I think more artists, I mean, I think of Christian and the Queens, for example.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, to be there and to be like, you know what, yo, I'm queer. Like, I was like, kudos for that. That's a big move, you know. People won't understand, but I think, yeah, times are changing. Who cares?
Yeah.
About your sexuality.
Like, yeah.
There's so many things to care about right now. Like, that's like the least of the problems. And also, it's my own things. I think this generation is clicking that and we'll slowly shed it to the others.
Do you think there is almost a misconception about LGBT people in Africa? Because I think looking at, you know, Pan-Africa, all of it, it's a huge continent. And there's so many different countries with different laws and rules, etc.
Yeah.
And I think people sometimes have a negative idea of Africa overall. How do you think we can, like, educate people a little bit more about that?
You know, when you hear Black History Month, people think, okay, we're going to talk about them slaves again.
Yeah.
Like, it's always about the same thing. Like, why don't we talk about the civilizations that existed? You know, look at the artifacts in the British Museum, for example. Centuries of history from my people, for example, which is chilling here. But this could help us piece back who we are.
Yeah.
Because we were people that, you know, we were rich. We had blacksmiths. We had a life. You know, it's not like colonization came and they just found people sitting around like eating rocks. Or,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know,
absolutely.
Like we were alive, bro. Yeah. So like I think
putting a positive spin on it.
No, positive. It's just 500 years of our history. We've lived for centuries.
Yeah.
I don't think we should focus on it that much. It doesn't mean we're denying it.
I know you had an experience recently, we have such a positive energy here, so
not to turn it
negative, but I know you had a negative experience.
Yeah.
At BBC recently.
Oh, yeah.
I was reading about this earlier. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
I was, it was odd. Something odd happened at, because I was waiting, the A&R was coming through, so Paul Wally was there, and they were doing this A&R room, and you could pick up your hand, like, if you wanted to perform or something like that.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not perform, play your song.
Cool, yeah.
So, yeah, already I'm a minority, so straight up, like, you know, it wasn't even that packed, and there wasn't a lot of people like me in there. So I thought I'd wait my turn, but, you know, Joe, I'm a jumping jack, you know. I was just like, me. And they didn't. And then I was like, okay, maybe I'm too much. And I thought maybe they'd choose somebody else, but, like, it just felt like one was invisible.
Yeah.
And then this one lady or grand, I don't know, I don't want to be rude. Your age is beautiful, man.
Yeah.
She is a grand, but like, she came through and like, she played this song for the judges or for Paul and them. And it was about killing Indians. Like, because Indians slip and Englishmen never fall. Let's play.
What?
Cowboys and Indians. I was like, boo, that's my cue. I was
uncomfortable.
That was weird. And most of the people were uncomfortable in the audience, but nobody said anything. And I didn't want to say anything because you're not out here to like burn bridges or anything. But like, I think when we see things like that and experience things like that in a space where we need to be empowered, you know, we got to say something. I'll take it on the chin.
Yeah.
But like next time, hopefully it doesn't happen to other black kids or that are in a space.
Absolutely.
Trying to get a moment and they just overlooked, you know. People saying about killing each other. Like, and the worst of all, they said it was dope. They were
right.
Like, oh, great lyrics.
And they didn't realize that it was completely inappropriate.
Our jaws were scraping the floor, at least mine.
Do you think people don't realize that this is an issue? Because I'm sure that this isn't the first time that this has ever happened to you. I'm sure this is something that happens to yourself and other people quite frequently. But I think a lot of people are unaware that these things go on. And how I think, you know, it's often the responsibility of allies to be the ones to stand up and say something.
Yeah.
I had a friend recently say to me that, you know, when she sees something like that happen, if it happens to herself, she's like, she feels like she can't speak up herself, because then she becomes the, in quotation marks, angry black woman.
Yeah.
And it's a really difficult thing to do, whereas if somebody else steps in and speaks up for her
on your behalf,
on her behalf,
that person ain't coming. Especially for a person like me, I've had to stand for myself all the way from the bottom of Africa, so I'm not gonna let people step on me now, like, or
which is good,
watch other
good
people get stepped on. It's just not right. It's not even arrogance. It's just like, I know what it feels like.
Yeah.
I think I've been there. I've seen what it did to my entire country.
Yeah.
You don't want to go that way.
Absolutely.
So it just made me sad and disappointed. And yeah, I shared it.
But thank you so much for speaking up, though, because I feel like a lot of people, you know, against something as large as the BBC, it's intimidating to stand up and speak out.
Oh, hell no. Yeah.
But you did it and you should be proud of that. And let's hope that things like that don't continue to happen going forward.
Let's pray so, I mean, let's work so.
Well, Toya, you have been an absolute pleasure to have on the show. Thank you so much for joining us.
FUBAR Radio presents Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville.
Kabaka Pyramid is our third and final guest of the day.
I just did my favorite thing for the first time on Sunday. I went to the Arsenal Tottenham game.
I had no doubt.
This white guy was sitting on beside us, and it's like everybody just excited at the trio.
Yeah,
we're just hugging each other.
That's honestly, I think only two things can get you doing that: music and football.
Exactly.
Personally,
yeah, it brings people together.
Races,
you know? Everything. Yeah,
absolutely.
Sure.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville every Wednesday from 4 PM. FUBAR Radio.
We've got, I'm sure, a legend of Ealing, Andrew Levy from the Brand New Heavies.
Hi guys,
how you doing?
I'm doing good. I got here on time. I'm very proud of myself because I had to drive quite far.
In exquisite eyewear as well.
I have to repeat that while the
mics are up.
Yeah, they're a bit odd. People think I'm wearing real glasses. They just take a little bit of the edge off.
Right,
real life.
Because life is harsh,
isn't it?
To look at. It's better to listen to, especially with the Brand New Heavies in existence.
Exactly. It's been this long.
30 years.
That's amazing. That's
unbelievable,
really,
isn't it?
Mad. Did you think it would last this long?
Absolutely. Well, do you know what? We got signed when I was about 21, 22. And when you're that young, you actually do think everything's going to last forever. Yeah.
That's a good point, because I felt the same way when I first signed
100%.
Monday. I was like, I'm reaching
exactly.
out. Fuck it. Fuck everyone.
It's all done.
Don't chat to me no more.
Exactly. I'll buy a house, buy a car, buy another car, get bored of that, buy another car. And that's what I did for 20 years. And I had a great time. And then you realise the mortgage is getting quite intense, and then you want to get married, and then you've got a mortgage and all that stuff. So you have to actually think about it as a job.
Yeah.
And then you start thinking into the future and start watching your money and buying property, whatever. Mm-hmm. But we've been constant. So, it's a shock when you go back 3 decades and we're still doing it. I'm still loving it though.
Did the financial aspect of it ever make you fall out of love with it, even a little?
Never really. You have to separate the two, really, and just don't go nuts every weekend and buy a house. Really, it's that simple.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You've had many highlights, man, in your sort of 30-year career. You know, being recognised by Stevie Wonder, finding out Mark Ronson, you inspired Mark Ronson. What has been your highlight? Can you pinpoint a highlight in those 3 decades?
Actually, the highlight for me was quite early on when we supported James Brown at Wembley Arena.
Mm. That's sick.
This was, it must have been 89.
Wow.
No, I'm not born in this room right now.
No, I was five.
Five. Okay.
86.
I'm not a granddad quite yet. But I think it was either 1990, 1989. We got we're the only sort of funk band that had a big band and a brass section and percussion and everything. So I don't know how we got picked for it, but we ended up supporting him. And we were doing our sound check on stage, and I'm like playing my bass, and I've got brass section, drummer. And I turned to my right, and he was standing there, like James Brown, wow. who could be at his hotel chilling out.
Yeah. Or firing someone.
Yeah, exactly, cracking the whip. I think he fired someone that night. You know what? He tried to steal our brass section that night.
No way. They he tried to hire people and stuff.
That's what he was actually doing. He wasn't listening to me playing bass. He's trying to.
Wow.
I could use these guys and save money not flying his brass section
Jesus.
Over. But anyway, he was there grooving away, dancing, and he came up to me, shook my hand, and shook the drummer's hand. And if I had died that night, I would have died a very, very happy guy.
Yeah. Would you have quit it all to be James Brown's? If he said to you, "Do you know what? Fuck this off and just tour with me for like you know, just be my guys."
That's a question. That's a massive
1989,
question.
1989, James Brown's like, wow! however he introduced
Get
himself.
Back. The bear tail.
Hey, the cast to be the boss! And then he just went to you, I can be your boss! What you do you say?
You know what, if he gave me some publishing, then back then I would never think like that.
That's a good point. And very few people would have, actually, isn't it? Because didn't he pretty much invent like the breaks that they use for drum and bass? And jungle, they all come from James Brown.
Exactly.
Don't they?
His drummer called Clyde Stubblefield invented the funky drummer beat.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is one of the first loops to be used back in the 90s with the hip hop movement.
Yeah.
Is that the Ahem Break? Is that what
the Amen Break as well? That's a different one. Because there's the funky drummer and then there's the Amen Break and they're different, but I can't remember exactly which is which. And what was it like working with Mr. Ronson?
It was good. It was good. We didn't really get into the same continent or country as it.
So did you have to do quite a lot of stuff remotely?
It was all remotely,
yeah.
It was all remote.
You've got a bit bees like that sometimes, isn't
it? Yeah, you have to these days. And it's easy to do that these days. Mm. I was hassling him so much. Do you know what? One thing, because basically he invited us to play at his 40th birthday party in Soho House, out in the country.
Mm.
And it was a long journey to get there because he wanted India and India wasn't in the band, so that was quite tricky.
Yeah.
And then one of the incentives for him to get us to play was that he'd do a free remix for us.
Cool.
And I thought, I'm going to hold you to that.
Yeah,
even if
it's
20 years.
them ones.
And I held him to it. He's a very honourable guy and he did it for nothing and just because he loved the band.
Yeah, because you can't say no to your inspirations.
You can't. Exactly.
How do you? You can't be too busy. You can't be too anything. You've got to do it.
But I realised that because he's so busy getting Oscars for soundtracks and working with the Foo Fighters and stuff, I've learnt. It took me a year to realise that if I write him an email that's longer than 7 words. Including not having my name underneath it or a hello on the top, he will never reply. So it took me
you worked
a year.
Out to the exact science of 7 words. On.
7 words.
Where's the song?
That's brilliant. Exactly.
Anytime soon?
So
thank you.
So it took about a year
to
get a paragraph. Yeah. But it's funny.
FUBAR Radio presents
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club.
We are joined in the studio now by professional comedian Brett Goldstein. How are you doing, Brett?
I'm very grateful to be here with you two.
If you could dig someone up and fuck them.
Gene Kelly.
Gene Kelly and Cary Grant, right?
Not Cary, there's not much time. If I could dig up Gene Kelly, I'd say, could we do a dance?
I've got the shovel in my boot.
In this scenario, is he still dead when you dig him up, or does he come out?
Does he come to life? Is he a rotten corpse, or is he?
That's fan club.
Nick Helm and Nathaniel Metcalf's fan club every Friday from 12 PM.
FUBAR Radio.
We're joined in the studio now by Juliet Sear.
Hello, thanks for having me.
How are you doing?
I'm very well, thanks.
You're a cake maker.
I am a cake maker and, a food maker, but I do specialise in cakes. And I've actually baked some for you today.
So
I've baked freshly
already.
For you this morning.
This morning?
Yeah, of course.
What time did you get up?
6. Oh, wow. Yes, cool. It's quite early. But
do you get up at 6 o'clock every day?
No. Well, I like a lie-in, but...
You got up at 6 to make us some cakes?
Yeah, of course, yeah. I do love feeding people. Like,
your dress is incredible.
Thanks. Borrow it if you like.
I think that's exactly the sort of thing that if I was to wear a dress, that's exactly the sort of dress that I would wear.
It's nice and bright, isn't it? And it's good because it doesn't crease. You can wash it. You don't have to iron it, which
it's beautiful.
I mean, that's the same with everything
that
I wash.
That's what you're always looking for, yeah.
I'm not ironing that.
Just so the listeners at home, it's a green leopard print dress. No, navy blue leopard print.
Oh, is it navy blue? I thought it was black.
Is it?
Oh, no, it is navy blue. You're right.
I think it's navy blue.
Oh, good. Right. So, like, what colour is the dress? It, you know, that thing that was going all the rage 3 years ago.
Yes.
Okay, cool. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I am...
Is that a terrible interview question?
No, it's a bit difficult, isn't it? I'm a local resident. I live 10 minutes away from here.
Where do you live?
I just live near, you know, the Albion pub. Do you go there, the Albion?
Yeah.
Just live around there.
All right.
I've been living in town for 5 years. But, I've just been baking for about 20 years. Mm-hmm. I work in food. I do all sorts of jobs like food styling. I make edible art installations and...
What's an edible art installation?
Well, just things like I made a 3 metre tall chocolate bunny that we set up outside City Hall. World's first edible Christmas jumper.
Where's City Hall?
The Mayor's.
What, on the Upper Street?
No, the proper big.
Oh, right.
There. And yeah, my job kind of involves lots of cooking and eating, writing. I've written a few books.
Hang on, you're talking too fast now. What's an edible jumper?
Edible Christmas jumper.
World's first edible Christmas jumper. So I was
asked.
What did
you use?
It was like a biscuit shell that we managed to sort of like bake and form a kind of like, it was like an armour, I guess. Mm. And then it was all decorated with, you know, like the rolling icing, like red and green white. And then put a little reindeer face on it.
You are a food. So you prefer savoury stuff?
Yeah.
So, okay, right. Now we've jumped right in the middle now because we're at your current point in your career, which is now, but how did you get to here? So where are you from?
I'm from Leigh-on-Sea in Essex.
Right.
Can you tell the Essex accent?
As soon as you mentioned it, I went, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And where did you go to school?
I went to school, big school.
Yeah.
I went to St Hilda's private school for girls, and I was very naughty and I hated it.
Oh, really? Why'd you hate it?
My sister's out there laughing. She loved it. I just used to get really angry and just think, like, why are we're at this private school? And I used to get really fuming and, like, stand up and say, my parents are giving you all this money and they're, like, basically just try and be saving money the whole time and giving you, like, old books from, like, 10 years students ago. They're all battered. And
that's why you hate it, because you like new books.
I wanted new books, not old ones. No, but I just found it really... I think I was just naughty.
It wasn't like a boarding school or anything?
It wasn't a boarding school, no. But it was just all for girls. I never didn't want to go to it, I think, first of all. My parents kind of forced me to go to it because I wanted to go to the good school that all my friends went to that had boys in it. Mm. So that was just a bit annoying. And then... yeah, I mean, I didn't completely hate it, but I was just a bit naughty, really.
Sure.
I was standing outside the classroom.
Because you had been sent out?
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, no.
You never found your way in.
No, not really.
Okay, and then so what did you do after school?
So after school, I hated it.
Not in the evenings.
Oh, yeah, not in the evenings. I said to my mum and dad, I refused to do any more education because I was cross with being sent to that school. So I said, I'm not going to college, not going to university. I just worked for a year and saved up money and I just went out to... be a windsurfer in Lanzarote for a couple of years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, is that a job?
For fun. And then I just worked in loads of bars and pubs and restaurants. I used to cook in all the kitchens in lots of... So that's where I kind of got into cooking.
And how old were you when you were doing all that?
Like between 16 to 19.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
So you have given cakes to various celebrities.
Oh, right, yeah. So
I have.
We've looked at your list of people that you've cooked for. Baked for.
They're probably not all on. Well, yeah. Is there a press releasey thing?
Yeah.
But you made a cake for Bryan Adams.
I did. He was really lovely as well.
So you got to. Ian McKellen and Bryan Adams.
Oh, Ian McKellen. Yeah. I mean, with Ian McKellen, it was through our son George because George was in Waiting for Godot as the boy. So we were kind of like around when it was his.
Was that Ian McKellen and Patrick Stewart?
Yeah. So George was in that then. Ian McKellen was so lovely to him. But
would you like a cake, Patrick Stewart?
Watch this.
Make a dough.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's good. You don't have to laugh.
She did it.
She did.
Yeah. So you don't want a cake then, you want some bread. Make it dough.
And then what would Ian McKellen say?
You sound like a I can only do the one line.
Yeah, it's fine.
You sound like a gaggle of schoolgirls. There you go.
There you go, Ian McKellen.
Ian McKellen Patrick's in Patrick's chair. Yeah.
You've met
it's like
Ian McKellen.
Being in the room.
It is the same,
yeah,
is it?
Exactly the same.
Yeah, exactly the same.
Make it.
Yeah,
dough.
Actually, I loved doing those cakes for Ian McKellen because
how
he really
cried. How many cakes did you make him? He cried?
Yeah.
Was it not what he wanted?
No, no, because no, but it was really emotional. Like, because that's the thing when you're doing cakes for someone, quite often it might be a point, like a, you know, like a sort of decade, a special decade or something. Mm. So I chatted with all the theatre people about what we'd make, and I did like a really
a giant
nice
cock.
I made a giant cock for Nick Grimshaw.
A giant cock cake.
But yeah.
No wonder he cried.
FUBAR Radio presents
Access All Areas.
It's the one and only Michael Griffiths from Love Island. Michael!
Yes, it is.
Which couple were the loudest in bed?
Tommy and Molly. I slept next to them, and I, like, there's times I'm just looking at them like, can you stop? Like, I'm trying to sleep. Like, just let me fall asleep, then continue your business. I don't know what they were doing, but they were active.
My word.
Access All Areas. Every Thursday from 6 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Johnny Lavi, hello.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Hey, hello.
Celebrity X Factor. You should be still.
It's
a sore subject.
Is it really? Is it really?
Of course not, man. Like, I literally look back at that and I'm like, I mean, it was surreal anyway to just be like, you know, in front
Saturday
of Simon Cowell, just be like,
what
am I doing on X Factor? Do you know what I mean? Like, I was running with it, and at first, like, admittedly, I didn't really know entirely what it was that I was wanting to get back, apart from just doing something and just kind of, I think a lot of the time when you just think, do you know what, I'm just going to scare myself and do something which is a little bit out of my comfort zone and learn a bit. And then when I was doing it, it was just at the time when I was thinking, I'll have a crack at this. I'm actually having a good time.
You know when Dermot said who was to go and who was to stay?
It was so confusing.
It was confusing.
It was confusing because the whole night was confusing. There was like new rules being made about, you know, like Nicole's buzzer and everything was just a bit like, what's going on a little bit? Mm. And then the wording at the end when he'd said the actor with the second lowest votes is Johnny Labby. And I went, wait, does that mean that the lowest votes are Martin and I'm safe? And I looked at it and I was like, just to spare at the moment, I was just a bit like,
I saw you looking confused.
And then I went, oh, does that mean I'm going home? And he went, yeah. And I was like, oh,
right.
But okay.
Johnny, can I say, because
cool.
Look.
No, it's
Martin did forget his words, bless him, didn't he?
Martin had his song changed twice that week. And including the last song choice was on Friday.
But did you stand there and think, you know what, I understand because he had his song changed, or did you stand there and think, do you know what, he forgot his words, I did a great performance, this isn't fair?
I think a lot of the time, it's out of your control and it's done, so if it's up to whatever it's up to, then it's already happened, it's already been decided. There's no amount of kicking and screaming, or there's no amount of being any bitterness, or that's going to change the situation, so you're just like, oh, that's cool. Like, I've got two songs on Spotify and iTunes.
True.
I had a duet with David Foster.
That was incredible, by the way.
I went to Simon Cowell's house in Malibu. I'm all of a sudden, now that I've got this influx and this sort of introduction to music, reconnected with music again, because I used to be really invested in music. So that's a nice thing to come back. But then also I'm going around and I'm making new, been very proactive, like this week, gone around and been messaging people to like collaborate and do things, because now I want to finish off this album. I want to finish off whatever it is. I want to go out. I want to do tours. I've got different ideas. I've got new. It's kind of like having like a Kickstarter again, you know, like
just giving you.
I'm not just going to go. No, that's going to be fun. That was cool. You know, like it's nice to know that people, you know, people heard me sing for the first time.
Would you say your winner is? Would you say that Megan is the winner of this show? Who's got that special something?
My winner was, you know, split between Victoria, which was a shame. You know, I was like, I cannot. My biggest shock of the night, and the reason why I look so lost and gormless on the actual like announcement of it.
I didn't say that.
Was the fact of like, I was like, I don't mind myself going because I was like thinking that's fine, you know, but I was thinking you can't get rid of Victoria. I was like, surely she's got the best voice on that show in my opinion. And artistically, you know, Megan's got a better sort of, you know, it's her own songs, it's her own music, so it's her own emotions, you know, when you're playing someone else's character, singing someone else's songs or whatever. So, but then also, you know, the Love Island group are really putting it together. They're finding their sort of sound and their feet, you know, at the start in the first episode. So people are growing every week.
But they are great fun. They've got nice energy,
I think. But what do you think? I mean, in all likelihood, it's probably going to be someone like Vinny or Martin who's probably going to end up winning.
Fatty.
Yeah. I mean, what do you think about that? Because they're less about the actual singing ability and more about like a Butlin's entertainment factor.
That's what people want, and that's what people want, you know? I don't know. It's like,
I genuinely think
that
it's
too TV
watching
these
it.
Days.
It's,
I don't
they're
know.
Entertaining. I'm not absolutely not taking away from that, but it's like a big party on stage rather than listening to what the quality of their voice.
Everyone had a reason to do the show, and everyone has a reason to do whatever it is they're doing on the show. So Vinny's was a very, you know, just
heartbreaking,
and he's such a lovely guy. Mm. Whether he wants to still be on it, I don't know.
Why?
He's like, I don't know. That's a whole. I can't really.
He's not taking it too seriously.
No, it's not. It's just the sort of thing of like, you know, he's having a great time and, you know, he's getting support and he's got massive fans and all the rest of it. And he's like, literally, he lights up that studio every, or he has done every week.
It's
because
fun.
It's just
fun. To watch.
You can't spend
the
entire evening all getting all like really serious about who's the best artist and all the rest of it, because everyone at the end of the day just wants a fun act.
Yes.
And it's Saturday night.
And it's Saturday night and it's, you know, the spur of the moment.
I loved your last, I just loved it with the white, the look, the shades, the white suit. You look so good. Were you upset when Simon said what he said?
It was odd because ultimately those things aren't my decision. I'd stylistically, I'd put like myself in some sort of like cross between, I don't know, James Brown, Harry Styles and Bruno Mars, Justin Timberlake vibe, you know?
So they got that,
I just said that to the team and said those are sort of like stylistically and things and influences. But that's the team, you know, and they're an incredible team. But it's not clothes that I bring myself, you know? So
you didn't put that white suit, you were told to wear it.
Yeah.
And then when you get stick for it, he's like, hang on.
Hold on a second. I didn't choose this.
But then also as well, like the whole big band thing. I love big band music, don't get me wrong, you know. I've just worked with a music producer who I know from back home that I know was classically trained. And he said the same thing, and like, I was classically trained, and it's a big part of my history, but it's not necessarily who I am and what I do. So the big band thing.
It's quite a niche big band,
isn't
it?
Yeah, big band is quite niche, but that's why it kind of felt like it wasn't being done, so it felt like a good thing to do. Mm-hmm. However, now that I look back at it, I was like, oh, do you know what? I should have done a Bruno track. I should have just danced, because that's what people would have wanted to see.
Do you have the option
to... Whereas they were sort of trying to make it cool and not trying, I'm just trying to keep it
maybe
within
trying
that.
It too hard
and so
way.
I was trying to, it's quite hard when you're trying to reinvent big band because it does go down that
that
sort of cabaret route. And
but
I guess
could
that,
you not have your say and say, do you know what, I want to do more of a Bruno, could you have not said I don't want, or is it difficult to because they've got in their head what they want you to do?
Don't know really, it was on the cards. I'm not saying it wasn't, you know. I love the track that I chose. I used to sing it in a band when I was about 15. We were called Fish with Feet.
Wow. Fish with Feet.
Genetic band.
Yeah. And it was just one of the track. I love rock and roll music. I love rock music. I love punk. I love house, techno, whatever. I've got such an eclectic taste because of dance. Yeah, I wanted to do like a sort of Elvis Presley cross with like Glenn Miller with that reference in there. So I'd sort of like... And I actually said to the team, I was like, nope, I want to do this one. And they were like, well, Simon would like you to do this one. And I was like, nope, I'm going to stick to my guns because that's what people have told me to do, you know, and be true to who you are.
So
I feel like I'm watching it back. I was really worried about how I'd be presented as well. You know, it's a reality show. You don't know how they're going to play you as a person.
Yes.
Your character.
And I can really just sort of be happy with what I did because... I think I came across exactly how I am.
Yeah.
And that was really comforting and a real like relief. And to have walked away from a show like that and not received one negative comment is like unheard of, I think.
I'm Tom/Christal Rasmussen. Listen to FUBAR Radio and I'll send you nudes.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio. FUBAR Radio.
Hello and welcome.
My name is Callum McSwiggan.
I've been with a fair few guys and I've never undressed a guy and gone, don't like that dick. Ever. Been with all different sizes and shapes and I've liked every one. I've never been in a situation where I've been like, I don't like that, I don't want that. So, you know, I'm into a mushroom head.
Callum McSwiggan.
Every Wednesday from 6 p.m.
Welcome everyone to Access All Areas.
It's Lizzie Cundy.
And Stephen Lang. Great to have you.
We're in the mood. I've got the one and only Andrew Stone. Yes, the man himself. We love him.
I got on really well with Romeo out of So Solid Crew. It's ironic because he's very butch and I'm quite camp and, you know, he
talks like this.
He's very sweet. He came to see my... I was in a musical. Do you know that? Wax
no.
Musical.
Which one?
I know. Wax the Musical. Okay.
No acting there then.
Boom, boom.
Access All Areas. Every Thursday from 6 p.m.
FUBAR Radio.
You're listening to FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio.
FUBAR Radio. FUBAR Radio. FUBAR Radio.